readingthebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 24th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Two professional handicappers join me here on today's show. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. We'll chat Super Bowl 53 and also the Pac-12 on the college basketball side. Second half of today's show, Tony George from Doc Sports will get his thoughts on the initial lines and the line movement for Super Bowl 53. Talk a little bit about injuries in the NBA and the impact that they have. And then finally wrap things up with the SEC versus Big 12 challenge in college hoops. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. A much-deserved break for Parker Michaels with the NHL All-Star break here, so he'll pick up his daily article next week. But Kyle Hunter's still doing his daily college basketball piece. We've got daily NBA and college basketball picks and previews. Going to be adding some new soccer content this weekend. We've got top-notch golf and UFC content. So a lot of things going on over at bangthebook.com. Keep it tuned over there. We'll have a lot of prop betting stuff for the Super Bowl next week as well. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. Sign up at DSI using that promo code BTB and the number 200. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. And if you're not ready to bet with a Sportsbook, maybe you're new to this business, head over to bangthebook.com. Check out our free pick contests, get involved in those, go through the handicapping process without putting any money on the line, and you've got a chance to win some cash prizes as well. So a good alternative for you if you're not ready to dive fully in to the sports betting industry. Two guests joined me on the program. The first, professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
That's going well. How are you doing on this Thursday morning?
Doing well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here, man. And you know, I've been talking Super Bowl. I've been talking college basketball all week already. Let's change it up a little bit here. It wouldn't be a segment with Brad Powers unless we talked something about college football. So in your evaluation, in your preparation, whatever you want to use here, any interesting nuggets that you've found, whether they're from the 2018 season or for the 2019 season as you've been working on college football?
You know, there's two. You know, I just, if you follow me on Twitter, you know, I did a little, you know, cheat sheet as far as everyone's schedules for the upcoming season. So team by team schedules, if you just want them in one place and you want to print them off in just a couple pages, every single team, and now not every single team doesn't have their complete schedule set, but most teams do. One thing that, you know, keep in mind, you know, for this upcoming season, a lot of teams have double buys. The season this year starts a little bit earlier. It's the end of August, and because of the way the calendar falls, we have a couple of months during the year where you can get, you know, an extra game in, you know, like the month of November. There's 5 weeks instead of four. So instead of just one bye week per season, this particular season, every single team has a pair of byes. So look for teams that have advantageous byes, like for example, let's start at the top of the polls. Alabama, their bye, their two byes this season come before arguably two of their toughest games, at Texas A&M and against LSU like they do each and every year. I think that's extremely fortuitous for the Crimson Tide. Same goes for Clemson. When are their byes? Prior to their two biggest rivals, Florida State and a road game against South Carolina. So keep in mind that a lot of well-positioned byes. And on top of that, you get teams that are probably at a disadvantage, and you hardly ever see this. I believe seven of Notre Dame's opponents have a bye prior to facing the Irish this year. So you're going to see a lot more of that, where teams are a lot because of the double bye, a lot more teams are going to have extra prep against you. That's a little bit of a disadvantage. That's one of two factors when it comes to college football, not to monologue it too long here, but the second major factor, this is something that you probably had to deep dive in most cases the last 10, 15 years to find lists of all the transfers and whatnot. Because of the new transfer portal rule that players got to put their name into the NCAA transfer, all that information is public domain. Now, you don't have to personally go to NCAA. There's good sites like ESPN and 247 that have a running transfer list. So I think that makes things a little bit easier when you're figuring out who the heck is going where. Because let's face it, 20 years ago, there certainly wasn't as many transfers as there are now.
Notre Dame plays seven teams coming off of a bye. That is a remarkable statistic. That is definitely something you want to keep in mind from a season win total standpoint, obviously from a futures standpoint as well. Man, talk about getting the shaft. And for a, you know, blue blood, blue chip kind of program getting the shaft. I mean, I'm not surprised the schedule sets up nicely for Alabama and Clemson, but for Notre Dame to get boned like that, that's really something.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's I'm not sure there's another team out there that has that many prior to it, but I'm sure there's quite a few examples this year where teams have that many buys. And let's face it, that's a negative that's not going to ever be priced in the marketplace. Well, when a season win total comes out, they're not thinking that far in advance as far as, you know, what kind of disadvantage they are from a scheduling aspect. So, and that's one to keep in your back pocket.
Well, and keep in mind, too, here, you know, obviously, as we just talked about, the timing of bye weeks, very, very important. I'm sure there are some teams that have a week one bye or a week two bye, something like that, where, you know, you either start later than everybody else or you play one game and then it's, what, 2 weeks of hitting each other before you play again. That's a real disadvantage as well, in my opinion, because you want to get your timing down. You want to get out there on the field. A week two or a week three bye is just not helpful.
Yep, and you're exactly right. That's something that's a major negative. And yeah, guess what team falls in that category? Notre Dame plays on Labor Day night, and right after that, of course, because they don't want a short, you know, week afterwards, they have a bye week too. So that is a negative. And I mean, not even going into it, but further. You want to talk about a team that's at a schedule disadvantage. I mean, a team like Georgia that doesn't have a bye prior to Notre Dame, the two teams they play prior are Murray State and Arkansas State. So, I mean, you almost could, you know, could say, hey, they do have a bye. So, yeah, on the surface, Notre Dame's schedule doesn't look too bad this year, but because if you really deep dive into it, they're at a major disadvantage. So everything you said, your instincts are right. There are quite a few teams that have like week two, week three byes, and I got to think, that's not going to be optimal for a lot of these teams. You'd probably, you know, preferably after non-conference play, right? You know, after 3-4 games, have a bye, play another 3-4 games, and then have a bye. That would be, you know, in an ideal world, if I was a head coach, that's what I'd want.
That's insane. That is crazy for Notre Dame. Obviously, you know, we've never heard of anything like that because we didn't have the two bye weeks, but that is astounding. All right, let's chat Super Bowl 53 here. Let's talk about initial movement, initial thoughts here on the number. We can obviously deep dive some more into the game next week with 2 weeks lead up to this game. New England, basically 2.5 market wide. Bovada, the only offshore three. Are there any threes out there at the brick and mortars in Vegas right now, Brad?
Yeah, you know what? I haven't seen anything. And, of course, I haven't driven up to Mesquite yet. Or anything like that. I haven't seen anything, you know, at three. Obviously, you know, the South Point made some news a couple days ago. They went to three, and it lasted for, what, 17 minutes? They took six figures and went right back to 2.5. Now, the question is, will it go to three? I do think so. Keep in mind, public's not getting too involved right now. They might be a little bit, but most of the public action is not going to come until next week, and really, honestly, later next week when everyone from around, you know, the country and the world comes into Vegas and starts betting this. So I would say, you know, the chances of three showing up in multiple books, especially here in Vegas, is really strong. So what does that mean? I could not understand for the life of me right now, if you want to bet the Rams, do not bet them right now. Are you kidding me? I mean, who in the heck in their right mind is betting the Rams right now at 2.5 when chances, I think, are very strong that you're going to see three being the most key number in all of football. I mean, 10%, nearly 10% of all games fall on three. Do yourself a favor if you're going to bet the Rams. Wait, hold out. I do think you're going to be able to get it free. On the flip side, if you're going to bet New England, I would say do it now. I don't see the number going back down to 2 or 1.5. And let's face it, you know, 2 probably means a little bit more than what it did because of the new kicking and PAT rules, but it really doesn't matter. It's inconsequential. Where it is consequential is it going up to 3. So if you want to bet New England, bet it now. If you want to bet the Rams, I'd say wait.
Well, and, of course, shop around for the best 2.5, obviously. I mean, you've got some 2.5 minus 105, minus 110, minus 115. Every cent of juice matters over the long term in terms of your return on investment, your break-even out there on New England, if that's the side that you're interested in. But, you know, Brad, something I started thinking about a little bit yesterday, you know, when you and I broke down the Patriots-Chargers game, you know, it was kind of like the old-school handicap versus the new-school handicap of terrible spot for the Chargers. They could very well have been the better team. Spot was just so bad. The coaching advantage for New England over Anthony Lynn. I'm sort of wondering about this game, if that quant crowd does come in on the Rams as we get closer to kickoff, and if this becomes something of an old school versus new school handicap of Brady and Belichick have been there, Goff and McVay haven't. But I think a lot of people do believe that the Rams, you know, if these two teams played 10 games, I think the Rams would be favored to win 60% of those. So I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on that, if this is sort of setting up as the same type of old school versus new school handicap.
Yeah, I think you can make a case. You know, the analytic crowd is going to, you know, probably prefer the Rams. They prefer, maybe not so much when it comes to the style of play, when it comes to, you know, McVay's, you know, analytical head coaching. In fact, there's studies out there that say that he's not very analytical. In fact, some of his decisions, including that going forward on 4th and 1, in the NFC Championship game at the 1-yard line, is about as old school as it gets. Most guys now would go for it, the analytics would say so. Yeah, you get the L.A. crowd here for Super Bowl weekend. I think it's an apathetic crowd, though. We've seen videos about the there's been a couple videos floating out there of how they reacted, some bars in L.A., to the news of the Rams winning that game. It's unlike most football cities in this great country. I could definitely see, and look, a couple of context clues. I mean, money's come in against New England in each of the last 2 playoff games. Money's come in on the Rams, at least it came in on the Rams in the NFC Championship game. So money in the last couple of games against New England on the Rams, I kind of see that. Or did we finally see an aha moment for New England? There's been doubt in the marketplace with New England all year long. And I'm sorry, but it doesn't get any more impressive than, you know, a lot of money came in against New England in the Chargers game, and New England played one of the best first halves we've seen at any team this football season. So you lose a lot of your money in that game. I'm not saying I did. I was on New England. Then in the next game, you know, in the AFC Championship game, you know, a lot of people, you know, that line ended up closing, you know, 3.5 in some spots with Kansas City. It was 3 most of the week. Late money came in on Kansas City, and yeah, the game went to overtime, and Kansas City at certain spots could have won, but looking at the box score, I mean, New England absolutely dominated that game. That should have been a 2-3 touchdown win for New England. If you've been betting against New England the last couple of weeks, I mean, sooner or later, it's got to click off in your head. I mean, how often do you really want to go against Brady and Belichick for a 3rd game in a row? I mean, think about what would happen if you got beat again. Look, we're all professionals and we got to trust their numbers and whatnot, but, you know, I'll let a team beat me, you know, once and be not afraid to go right back to them or against them the next week if I felt I had a strong take. But if they've taken me to the woodshed 2 weeks in a row, I got to think there's at least a portion of the crowd out there that's going to be unwilling to do so again. And let's face it, the Super Bowl, if you're a sharper player, I don't think the best way to get at the Super Bowl is necessarily side or total. If you're anti-New England, you can find probably a little bit more value in the prop market.
Yeah, we'll talk about the prop market in a second, but something I want to touch on here with the total. You know, the total coming down from 58 to 56.5, obviously a sharp move there. We know the public will play the over in the Super Bowl because they want points. They want an exciting game. So sharp move on the total down. You mentioned context clues. I mean, I sort of feel like with a Rams team that gave up 6 yards per play in the regular season, has played a little bit better defensively here in the playoffs, they would want a higher scoring game. So the fact that the total is coming down, I think kind of in a roundabout way looks pretty good for New England.
Yeah, and I mean, they featured Sony Michel quite a bit. I mean, Brady had his numbers last week, but, you know, Sony Michel against the Chiefs, and the fully expected to see. Although, it's very tough predicting exactly what Belichick's going to do. I mean, just because it worked in the last game doesn't mean he's going to go right back to it the next week. I mean, 1 week James White's getting 15 receptions, the next week it's pretty much, you know, it's back to Gronk and Edelman. So, I mean, that's the beauty of Belichick. I mean, he's like a box of chocolates. You really never know what you're going to get. But, yeah, I agree. If it's a lower scoring game, probably favors the Pats. And the Rams have been leaning more run heavy. At least they were at the end, you know, prior to the NFC Championship game. They had three consecutive games where they had 40 rush attempts or more. They hadn't done that at all in their first 14 games of the season. And maybe there's a little bit less trust with Jared Goff, even though he had a pretty good NFC Championship game. Maybe, you know, the notion's always to be a little bit conservative early. And even New England and Belichick, no matter how many times they've been in the Super Bowl, they've always been conservative early. I mean, it's out there that they've only scored 3 points combined in their previous 8 Super Bowls, that 3 points coming in the last one. So, I mean, I expect the Rams to probably be a little bit conservative out of the gate, New England to be conservative. So, and there's no question about it. The expectation, at least right now in the market, it's going to be a little bit lower scoring than what the bookmakers thought. But I'll say this, you know, it's going to get to a point now where, you know, maybe it goes a little bit lower and you maybe get some context clues then. But you and I both know, if you're asking me where it's going to close, I think when the public money shows up here, you're exactly right. I mean, money's going to really come in on the over in this game, and this is the one game where the public can have a say.
All right, so let's talk about the prop market here, and we'll talk specific bets that our guests like on next week's show. But, you know, Brad, there are 800-some-odd prop books. Some of the offshores even have over 1,000. So a lot of things for you to try to figure out. How do you organize your prop betting strategy? How do you start putting together your plan of attack?
I mean, first and foremost, there's two different methods to go at this. I mean, there's a handicapping aspect or there's just a pure betting aspect where you just get, you know, pick off bad numbers. Now, the problem is if you're just picking off bad numbers and if you fully know what numbers should be priced at just from generally speaking, you know, how many points should be priced in, as far as, you know, first half compared to second half and stuff like that. I mean, it's one thing to pick off bad numbers because you can get some big-time middles when it comes to Super Bowl prop betting. And it's a different, you know, releasing something to your customers that are coming into town Super Bowl weekend, and it's kind of easily accessible to get it. So two different thought processes there. I think generally speaking, if you got an idea of, you know, where, like, let's say New England, you know, I'm hypothesizing at this point that I think Bill Belichick's very familiar with the Rams, you know, top wide receiver, Brandon Cooks, or at least he's one of them along with Robert Woods. You know, he's seen Brandon Cooks in practice, knows his strengths and weaknesses. Why? Because he was in New England last year. So I do think, you know, I can tell you right now I'm going to be attacking Brandon Cooks, the wide receiver for the Rams, under, because one thing that, you know, Belichick does, he takes away what you do best and just likes to take it away. He likes you to play left-handed. And let's be honest, I don't know what the situation is with Todd Gurley and C.J. Anderson. Gurley looked fine in the divisional round, didn't look fine the next week. So I think you're going to have one of your easiest bets of the year on Gurley over or under, depending on whether he's healthy or not. I'm expecting his rush yards and whatnot to be priced probably in the upper 50s. That looks awfully cheap, but he only had 10 yards in his previous game. So that could be something you could attack. But to be perfectly frank, you know, I would say be very careful. And if you're not a pro at this, and you think, you know, something's going to be going one way, like your handicap of the game says there's going to be this, be careful overextending yourself, because if you are wrong on how that the game is going to be played, you can find yourself in quite a bit of a hole if you're just wrong on how the game's going to be played, because you got 6, 8, 10 bets going in that direction. Try to diversify. I would say number one rule, diversify in your portfolio a little bit for a little bit of protection. Be very careful. I would say betting needle in the haystack props. You know, who's going to score the first touchdown? Who's going to be MVP? I would much prefer to bet on stuff that have a clear-cut answer, yes or no, over, under, to get a clear-cut answer, exact margin. I avoid that. I mean, again, that's needle in the haystack type of stuff there. And, of course, just like any other side or total line, shop around. I mean, there's differences between 15 yards with individual player prop. If you're in town for the weekend, rent a car or at least walk up and down the strip to the different places. You can find some better numbers at different places.
Well, I actually got an email question about this, and unfortunately, I don't have the concrete answer yet. I'm going to ask somebody who's a little bit better at math than I am. But John reached out via email and mentioned that he's got multiple outs and he's looking at differences and middle options for this prop betting market, and he sent over a couple of examples here. Over at Bet Online, Tom Brady pass yards over 295.5 -114. Over at my bookie, Brady pass yards under 319.5 -115.
Oh, wow.
That's a 24-yard middle. So I guess the question is kind of, do you play the middle or do you play the over on the lower number or the under on the higher number?
That's a good point. I would say probably play the middle more. The chances of it falling in between, I get it. Play more towards the thing that you think is actually going to happen, and maybe, and again, don't quote me exactly. I'm not one of the best, market price guys. I'm good at one of my best qualities is predicting where the market will go. And more often than not, when it comes to college football, to me, if you got an opinion already, take the lower, the higher, lower of the number, if you want to, think that Brady's going to go off. And bet the over, or vice versa. If you think he's going to struggle, take the higher number, bet under. But also, like I just said, diversify in your account. You don't have to take all the way back on the hedge, but maybe 50% on the hedge back on the other side, because that is a substantial middle there, 20-some yards. It's just something you wouldn't find in any individual player prop during the course of the regular season or even earlier playoff games.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can figure this out, because his question is basically, how do you calculate if these bets would be plus EV given the difference in the totals along with the juice? And I just got this about an hour before the show, so I haven't had a ton of time to dig into it. I'm going to do that, and I'm going to reach out to some people that I respect that come from more of a quant standpoint and check with them. But definitely look for these middle opportunities that are out there. And, of course, always shop around for the best line that's out there. So, and you mentioned diversifying, and this is something we could talk about next week, but this is the last point I want to make here. If you like the Patriots, like let's say you want to take Patriots -2.5 or Patriots money line, why not play Jared Goff to win the MVP +250, +225, something like that? If the Rams are going to win this game, it's probably going to be because of Jared Goff. So there's your protection at plus money on your New England investment. And I think that's, one of the things you're talking about in terms of diversifying. If you like New England, don't load up on New England overs, because then you're just really exposed on one side.
Yeah. Or somehow, New England they find ways to win, unlike any other team in football. You could be right. New England wins and they completely play a different style than what you're totally expecting. So, that's what makes, betting New England Super Bowl is quite tough. I mean, Belichick has a completely different game plan, it seems, from a week-to-week basis, let alone a year-to-year basis when it comes to the Super Bowl. So, again, diversification, avoid needle in the haystack. Everyone wants to bet a little to win a lot. It's not positive, EV, more often than not, to bet yes on the safety, yes on the overtime. That's totally priced and then some into the marketplace overpriced. I mean, most sharps are going to bet the no on that because they find value. They're not afraid to bet a lot to win a little when it comes to those props. So those are a couple of things to avoid when Super Bowl. And look, just like any other week, any other sport, you know, having a set bankroll, don't overextend yourself because, again, it's the last game of the year. If you're trying to play catch up, and again, and not saying that you can't do it, but history says you can't because the studies out there say pretty much 97% bettors lose. And I'll make a bold prediction. I don't think the state of Nevada will ever have another losing Super Bowl. I haven't had one in 10 years. And even the last couple of years with a lot of individual player props and those popular props like defensive touchdown and overtime, some of those have cashed in recent years. And they've still shown a profit. Be very wary. I mean, you can get some positive EV bets out there, but if you're going up against the book too much, the odds are against you.
All right, let's transition over to the college basketball side of things because we'll have an entire segment to talk Super Bowl next week. Let's talk about the Pac-12 as we continue our conference-by-conference breakdowns. And I want to preface this by apologizing that we're going to talk about the Pac-12 because, this thing is bad.
you thought the football was bad. Here comes the basketball in the hardwood. And it's remarkable considering that I would say, and you take out football and take out basketball, the Pac-12 is arguably one of the best conferences when it comes to sports in the entire country. But clearly, we don't have a team here, and forget the top 20. I don't have a team in my top 25, top 30, top 35. Washington's starting to get there as far as sneaking into the top 40, but that's it. So we got one team that's sneaking around the chicken coop when it comes to being a top 40 team, and that's only because Washington's been red hot. The conference has been extremely disappointing. Arizona's been, the flag bearer of the conference as of late, but they obviously dealt with some FBI allegations. They lost a bunch of starters from last year, had some transfers. They weren't the same at the start of the season. Oregon lost one of their best players, one of the best players in the entire country, let alone the conference, and Manute Bol's son, Bol Bol. And they're the preseason favorite, the Ducks. They haven't lived up to expectations. UCLA's a mess, firing their coach, Steve Alford. Utah's down this year. I mean, it's not a good look for the Pac-12. I mean, the football's one thing. To have both your major profitable sports being this bad, there's no question about it. It's the worst Power 5 conference out there right now.
I mean, it is incredulous to me that people are talking about a Power 5 conference being a one-bid league, and it could very well happen. It is astonishing. So, you mentioned Washington, probably the standout team right now. Is that going to continue? I mean, who is the class of this conference, so to speak?
And that's, I can only go from what I've seen recently, and you can get on me for recency bias. I think it's two teams. I think it's Washington. Teams, look, they got a second-year coach. He comes over from Syracuse. He's running the zone. They were a pretty good play-on team last year once they got the zone figured out, and they've been a pretty good team here. I mean, they've been consistent. They've been laying even some big numbers as of late and covering. I'll go with them. I mean, they didn't look that great in non-conference, lost to a couple highly ranked teams early on, but, it's a team that's won seven straight games. The other team, Arizona, starting to find their way a little bit, had a disappointing result at home against Oregon last week, but other than that, Arizona's figured some things out, and it makes some sense. They were a young team dealing with a lot of distractions, had a couple transfers. I do, Sean Miller's a pretty good coach. I think he's one of the better coaches out there that's never been to the Final Four. Yeah, I would say it's Washington, Arizona, and maybe Oregon if they start to figure things out without their best player as we move along towards the rest of the season. But, it's not like picking between children. That's kind of forcing my hand a little bit. I don't like a lot of those options.
No, I don't blame you. And you look at tonight's card even in the Pac-12, and Oregon's a 2.5-point favorite against Washington State, who hasn't lost a conference game and has won seven games in a row. So, again, that's one of those things that just kind of speaks to what's going on in a conference like this. And I know that Oregon has a pretty good home court edge there in Eugene. And This line does imply Washington would be a neutral site favorite, as they should be. But again, this is the top team in the conference, so to speak, and they're still getting 2.5 tonight against an Oregon team missing its best player. So I think that's just kind of a microcosm of what we're dealing with here.
Great point. There's no dominant team in the conference. Sometimes, you know, that can be, you know, a little bit enjoyable when it comes to handicapping if you find teams on the right spots. And the cool thing about the Pac-12 is, you know, they play these Thursday-Saturday spots, and because of the spots, and but, you know, most of them are back-to-back home, back-to-back road, because of certain scheduling spots, I kind of like, you know, I don't care that there's not a great team in the conference because of their scheduling spots. You know, the Pac-12 is one conference that I don't mind handicapping, and I tend to, if you're a situational handicapper like me or believing, you know, fading outliers, having that game, you know, immediately after, you know, 48 hours after, sometimes I can find some value in the marketplace either playing on those teams or against them. So I know they don't have a great team, but because you have a lot of teams that are jumbled together and, you know, power rating relatively close, any type of extra value point, whether it comes to a situation or an outlier, say a team hit 14 threes in one game, next night I wouldn't mind fading them. I can find some value in the Pac-12 the way things are.
Well, and I like to do a lot of situational handicapping in the NBA and college basketball just because, I mean, I think that it still works. I think a lot of those methods are still applicable here. And when it comes to the Pac-12, you know, you don't have a team that I would say is good enough to overcome a lot of those tough spots. You know, you get tough spots in the Big East or something like that where a team's got to go all the way out to Creighton and play in Omaha and then play in DePaul before heading back home. Maybe you've got a team that's good enough to overcome that. I think you get a lot of teams that fall victim to situational spots in conferences where, you know, a lot of those teams are interchangeably ranked.
You do. And one thing that I started buying into Washington is they overcame one of those scheduling quirks when it comes to the Pac-12. They played back-to-back road games in Utah and Colorado just a couple weeks ago. Now, either one of those two teams aren't very good, but the market's going to take that into consideration. Both teams unique, and you're playing in elevation. You're playing two games in a matter of 3 days on the road, and yet Washington won both games, covered both games. To me, because they overcame that situational spot and covered both, to me, that's when I started buying Washington. Now, you know, coming up here, if you're looking at their future schedule, next seven games, I mean, five of them are on the road, so they're definitely coming up to their most important stretch of the season. But because of what they just did a couple weeks ago, I at least have a lot more confidence because they were one team that showed to me and proved to me that they can overcome a couple of those scheduling quirks.
Well, and again, I understand it's really hard for people to do 353 Division I teams, and this is why we talk about conference specialization. You know, another game that kind of stands out to me tonight, 671-672, Colorado and California, Cal Berkeley. You know, Colorado, we know they have that home court edge, playing in altitude there in Boulder. It helps them in conference play. They're on the road laying 6.5. Now, whether or not they cover the game is another question, but it speaks to just how bad Cal is. So I would take that into consideration in future games for Cal because they're getting 6.5 against a team that has significant home road splits. Those are things you can look at and use to your advantage in the future.
Yeah, as bad as the Pac-12 is, I mean, I can make a case where what's even worse is their worst team. California is the worst power-rated Power 5 team I have in the country, not even in the top 225. Not even in the top 225 of basketball. And it hasn't been a good look lately. I mean, you're talking about a team that's got one cover in their last 10, and I think one win in their last 9 for Cal. Now, I certainly don't want to – I can't bet just because how bad Cal, and until I see any kind of positive things from them, I'm just not going to be on Cal. But I'm certainly not willing to lay 6.5 on the road with Colorado, who's 1-4 in their last 5 games. To me, it's a pass for me. Colorado in that unique situation. We talk about unique situations. You know, you got to learn how to win before you learn how to cover. Ralph Michaels, one of your guests, you know, taught me that saying, and until Colorado proves that they can win, let alone get some margin, I certainly don't want to be on them. So tonight, that 6-7-1, 6-7-2, and feel free to have a bunch of tickets in your pocket on the game. I'm going to pass.
Oh, no, I'm not playing it. I'm just saying that, you know, there are some clues here, even on games you're not playing it. And you can see these with your conference specialization. That's why we tell you to focus in on a couple of these conferences.
Yeah, no question. And I was joking with you, buddy. I knew that you wouldn't have too much on it. But, yeah, and you bring up a point. If someone asks me, you know, I'm football is basically over with. I'm diving into college basketball. What should I do? Focus on – take one conference and two, if you want. Deep dive into those conferences, you know, study the teams, read the press conferences. If you just got an extra, you know, couple hours a day to do it, don't spread yourself thin trying to handicap everything. Just focus in on a couple conferences. A lot of times you can know more than the marketplace. Now, it gets tougher as the season moves along because a lot of people are doing that, and the entire world goes from – college basketball being a very niche market, so by the time March comes around, it's the most bet market in the world when it comes to March Madness. So I would say right now, the next 6 weeks, just focus in, study up on one or two conferences, and you know, if you know what you're doing, I'm not saying I can guarantee you a lot of success, but you'll certainly have more success than most.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. What's going on at the website right now, man?
Yeah, bradpowersports.com. You know, I talk about it all the time. It is my newsletter, and, you know, I got a special issue coming out next week as far as the Super Bowl will get you covered as far as all the props and, of course, the game prediction and whatnot. But I'll tell you what, I'll throw that Super Bowl issue in for free if you sign up early for next season. And keep in mind, you're going to be covered not just for this year's Super Bowl, all the way through next year's Super Bowl. The price of that newsletter is $69, number one newsletter in the country last 4 years running. And combine all, every single college football pick, every single NFL pick for the last 4 years. We're talking more than 600 games of sample size. We're hitting 57% on best bets. That's by far best out of all the newsletters. So check it out, $69. You can download past issues for free. If you're interested in hoops, it's daily VIP action. It's $2.99 for college basketball. Check it all out at bradpowersports.com.
And as always, you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, always a pleasure, brother. Thank you so much for joining me. Talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Take care, my friend.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Brad Powers over at bradpowersports.com, at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Definitely a very, very smart guy there. Very savvy handicapper, and always good to chat with him here on the program. And you know, again, we talk about trying to file things away. You know, I mean, this is a long-term business. And when you can file these nuggets away for the future, keep them in mind with something like that Colorado and Cal line tonight, or even, you know, thinking about Washington and the fact that, you know, they play that zone defense now that's really rounding into form. When they play jump shot oriented teams in the Pac-12, maybe that's a good spot to lay a little bit bigger of a number. So, you know, these are all, these are all very important things that you want to factor into the handicapping process, file them away, store them away for a rainy day, and conference specialization can be a big help with something like that. We got one more guest here for this Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Tony George from Doc Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
Good, real good. I'm ready to get it done here today in college basketball and NBA and of course, looking ahead to some Super Bowl props, starting in on those here the next couple of days. Haven't gathered all the information on that yet, but be picking up some different sheets around town for that here this week, or you can get them on your apps, I guess, out here. Let me rephrase it. I'm still in the old school mode, but having a nice surge in the NBA here, trying to play a little catch up in college basketball. Been some surprising results, but nonetheless, things are going above average here.
All right, so let's talk Super Bowl 53 a little bit. 2.5, total 56.5 in that type of range. What do you think about what we've seen here so far, Tony, from, you know, the opening line of you know, some places Rams -1 to what we've got now with New England -2.5?
Well, you've got, you know, usually it's early money, sharp money, but public really has hit this a little bit. You know, and this is, you know, the Super Bowl is rare. unlike, you know, Major League Baseball World Series or even the NBA Finals. You know, this line is kind of driven by the public more than any other singled out game of the year. So, you know, at the end of the day, I guess it's gonna end up being pros versus Joes. You know, the public's going to be on New England, and the pros are going to be on the Rams. If you keep giving them more and more, you know, points here, you know, two and a half now, probably see three. You know, really, it's really what it boils down to me is, in the simplest of terms, without even overthinking it, are you going to bet the better team in the Rams, or are you going to bet Brady and Belichick? I mean, that's the bottom line. And, you know, I'm torn on that. I faded Brady and Belichick against Kansas City, and you can bitch and moan about the calls and, you know, the Rams shouldn't be there because of this, and, you know, Kansas City should be there because of that. You know, at the end of the day, both those teams put themselves in positions where they ended up losing because they put themselves in bad positions late in the games and were outplayed, at one point in time or another, you know. And so, you know, at the end of the day, when you have a team like New England that has a game plan that can hold Kansas City to 32 yards at Arrowhead in the first half, Kansas City probably didn't deserve to win. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, New England's a good team, but it's still your bet in Brady and Belichick versus a better team. And how do you want to approach that? Forget looking at the handicapping matrices and, you know, because the line's sharp, you know, obviously it's the only game in town. If one thing about the Super Bowl, Adam, if this game was on a regular Sunday, I would consider it having not a lot of line value and one you just want to watch, a really good football game between two really good teams, you know. And the other thing is, are you going to let Tom Brady, you know, the greatest of all time, arguably, get beat up by a 24 or 25-year-old kid? And is Belichick going to get out-coached by a 30-something, you know, 30-year-old coach? And, you know, so you have to ask yourself those questions. And that's kind of at least the way I'm looking at it now. But I do think the Rams are the better team here, and I think the total is about right on the number.
Now, there are probably a lot of people that are, you know, betting the Super Bowl for maybe the third, fourth, or fifth season, something like that. Obviously, you've been in this business a very long time. I think 2 weeks before the Super Bowl is actually a detriment from a betting and handicapping standpoint, because we beat every damn angle to death about this game. So how do you sort of manage that, where you've got basically 2 weeks of thinking about this game?
Well, one thing that I do that's probably a lot different than 99% of what your listeners do, I don't watch ESPN and NFL Network and, you know, all these pregame shows, you know, John Shine, you know. I'll watch some handicapping videos on YouTube from handicappers that I respect that have different takes, that look at things the way that I look at things. But the way the general public looks at things, you know, pardon me, in terms of a major network and all these shows that are just, you know, like you said, leaving no stone unturned. You know, when this guy eats grapefruit on Thursday and then follows it up with cottage cheese, he runs for 2.7 yards more per possession. You know, I mean, you can just go through the list of things. I tend to ignore them and look at what's real, you know. And a lot of times, you know, the problem with handicapping, and it happens to me, it happens to Brad Powers, one of your other guests here on the show, you know, especially looking at college basketball when there's 7 or 8 games, you can't see the forest because of all the trees. And you never want to get yourself in that position, especially if you're in a bad streak. You strip it down and take a look at it for what it is in the simplest of terms. You know, it's simple. I've done this 27. This is my 27th Super Bowl. I think I've won 19 of them, you know, on the side play over the years. So I've lost some. But, you know, at the end of the day, I tend more to concentrate on the prop bets more than the side in total. You know, and prop betting, you know, is really where you can win some money. And, you know, you used to be able to win a lot of money prop betting because of the difference between Westgate and the Mirage. And, you know, we're talking like 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. You could do a lot of middles. Over and under rushing yards for the running back for one team in the Super Bowl may be 68.7 at one book and 79.5 is another book or something, you know, something like that. And you were able to go in and middle both sides. Now with the information age, they're all pretty close. But still, I tend to do something where I think I have what I call a positive expectation bet. You know, something that I can sink my teeth into that's not what color a tie Jim Nance is going to wear or how many times they're going to mention Giselle or, you know, always bet the coin flip. Just, you know, I do a lot of, you know, like most guys, do a lot of $20 bets on some props, you know, that player props, over and under passing yards, interceptions, you know, how many field goals. You know, break it down by quarter. You know, now you could do halftime wagering, which is nice, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of different options to explore. But there I have a set value of like 7 or 8 or 9 prop bets that I always look into. You know, the running back yards, receiving yards, interceptions, you know, some things to do with turnovers. I always throw a $50 bet on a safety just because the number is like 30-1 or something. You know, just maybe you get lucky. I hit one here a couple, 3 years ago. But, you know, there's a few that you throw out there and say, well, I'm going to take a chance because it's 30-40-1. But, you know, at the end of the day, on the side in the total is the least amount of money that I have wagered when it comes to the Super Bowl, Adam. I have more wagered on other things that I think have some validity.
Well, we'll talk more about some of the specific prop bets that you've made or that you really do like on next Thursday's segment. But let's transition over to the NBA because I want to touch on this point with you here. Victor Oladipo goes down last night. It was not pretty. The Pacers rallied to win that game over Toronto. Didn't cover the number, but you know, still, I mean, to get that win, I think was impressive enough for them after watching their best player go down. When a superstar goes down, Tony, how do you deal with it in the short term for that team?
Well, you look to fade them when you can, just like you have with the Lakers with James being out. They've won some games, but, you know, at the end of the day, when players go out, you know, you got to look to fade them in spots. You know, you got Davis out for New Orleans. There's a huge injury, much like the Oladipo. One thing in the favor of Indiana, I guess, more than anything else, is the way they play defense. They can really play defense when they dial it in, you know. And so that keeps them in games, you know. But losing your leading scorer, you know, and the superstar on your team is definitely a spot you want to start to look to fade those teams, you know, short term. I usually wait a game. So the Pacers next game, you know, and I don't have it up in front of me right now. But, you know, I want to wait and see how they react, you know, the next game before I do anything against them. How are they going to fare? And I was going to look and see here, you know, since we're on the discussion, I'll just go ahead and take a look at that real quick.
They play Memphis on Saturday night.
Okay, and Memphis is beat up. You know, they got guys out, you know. Conley's out. Gasol, I mean, so there's a team that's, you know, look how they got beat up last night, you know, with their stars out. But is that on the road or at home?
That one's on the road for Indiana. And then they come right back and they actually play Golden State at home, which is going to be very interesting for them.
There's your fade spot. There's your fade spot right there. See what they do against Memphis. If they look like dog shit, you know, they look discombobulated on offense. Chemistry's not there. You know, it's a little different with one player versus like the Lakers with like 3 players out. You've got Ball, James, well, Rondo's been out, so they're used to that. But let's just say like tonight, the Lakers got 3 players that are main contributors to their team out. So the number one thing I look at is what players are filling in and what players are out of position. Meaning they usually don't play 2 guard. They usually don't play small forward role. They usually don't play in the you know, be expected to be the main rebounder. So you have players playing out of position, and how does that chemistry work against a team that's fully healthy? So you're going to have to watch Indiana against Memphis, and Memphis poses that's going to be a low-scoring game, I'll tell you that. That total will be under 200 for Memphis and Indiana in that game. Guarantee you. Guarantee you. And I'd be surprised if anybody scored 100 points in that one. But, you know, at the end, so you might want to look at the totals too and how it affects them. You know, look at the totals adjustments, because you got a player that's shooting 20-some points a game and makes a lot of things happen for you, you know, that now he's out of the mix. But, you know, watch them for a game and then turn around, assess what they did, take a look at the box score, see who's on deck. Thing about Golden State is you might want to look at halftime lines on games like that, because bottom line is Golden State's going to be laying double digits in there no matter how it shakes out, you know, in that game when they travel to Indiana. You know, Golden State teams like that are clearly much better get complacent in the second half and tend to let off the throttle a little bit. But first half, usually they come in, they dial it in, they put up a decent number, then they coast their way through the game, which is why a lot of guys miss a lot of covers in the NBA, laying big points with good teams. You know, get that first half line to get that number down into single digits, and if it's reasonable, bet it. I've been doing that this year, Adam, and in the NBA year to date, I've only had one loss on a first half line in the NBA this entire season. I put out, I don't know, 10 or 12 of them. So, you know, that might be a game there you want to look at the first half line when they play Golden State. So there's different ways to manipulate it and take a look at it, but watching for a game, then turn around and you know, reassess, you know, see what they did.
You know, something that's kind of interesting about the Pacers here, and you mentioned the loss of production from Oladipo, which is certainly significant, but teams are also going to change their tempos based on, you know, the fact that Oladipo's not there. Oladipo missed some time earlier this year, and in fact, the Pacers have only played 34 more minutes with Oladipo on the floor than off the floor, and their pace has actually been much quicker when he hasn't been on the floor. So that's kind of interesting. You would think a team would want to slow it down, you know, because without your best player, the other team probably has an advantage on more possessions, but they actually got faster. So I'll be curious to see if that continues for the Pacers here, if they speed up the game a little bit without their best player. That'll be an interesting trend to watch.
Yeah, well, you know, lineup, you know, they change their lineup and their offensive tempo a little bit. Sometimes they want to run a little bit more. They maybe a team like Indiana that's ranked 21st in the league, you know, on offense now. And of course, you talk about that Memphis game. Memphis is dead last. They're 30th. Indiana's 21st. Indiana's now, you know, that's a false rating because their biggest point production player is out. So they're going to, you know, on a five, I'll guarantee you, if you broke down top five offenses, or you broke down the top offenses on a five-game stretch, you know, say the next five games, you know, I'll guarantee you that Indiana is going to be less than ranked 21st, you know, in the NBA, which is not a good, you know, like I said, Indiana's success comes with their defense. There's no doubt about it. It's not that they're not going to, you know, that the entire team, you know, is going to fall apart because one player is out. But Indiana is the number one ranked defense in the NBA. So my biggest concern, not with Indiana, is not so much how are they going to score, you know. And you're saying, well, they're going to change pace, they're going to change offensive tempo, they're going to go small versus long. You know, with, you know, bringing in, you know, rotating a bunch of guards in there and picking up the pace. I understand that philosophy. That's probably what you have to do. But my biggest concern and my biggest watchdog item is going to be, you're the number one ranked defense in the NBA. How are you going to maintain that number one defense with him out? And, you know, if they can still maintain a top five defensive efficiency rating, they're probably going to be able to cover some numbers because they're going to be getting some good numbers now because odds makers are going to put a bigger number on teams they're playing than they would have otherwise.
All right, let's go to the college hardwood here because we got the Big 12 SEC Challenge this weekend. Iowa State, Ole Miss, Alabama, Baylor, Florida, TCU, South Carolina, Oklahoma State, Texas, Georgia, Kansas State versus Texas A&M, West Virginia, Tennessee, Vandy, Oklahoma, Kansas, Kentucky, the marquee game, Arkansas, Texas Tech. Tony, what do you think about these non-conference games right in the middle of the conference play season?
Well, it provides a challenge. You know, it really does. When you start playing out of conference in, you know, late January. You know, I stated this, I believe, on your show last week. there's three seasons. There's the non-conference schedule, then there's the regular season schedule, and then there's the postseason schedule. There's three seasons within a season. You handicap each one a different way. Now we're in the middle of conference action. Teams are finding their groove. You're used to knowing, you know, how Kansas State always plays Kansas or how Iowa State's tough to beat at home, and they're getting a number against a highly ranked team. They're almost an automatic take. You know, just a couple of the – you're going to be wanting to take home teams in the Mo Valley, even though they have a losing record, you know, and they're, if they cover numbers or they beat teams straight up that are better than them. All the things that you, you know, are used to, now you throw it out the window. Now you just – you basically have to go off power ratings. You really do. So you ask yourself, well, you know, in my opinion, I think the Big 12 conference is only behind the Big 10 conference in terms of overall, you know, overall conferences. I really do. I think the Southeastern Conference is behind the ACC. If you take a look at KenPom and a couple other of these team rankings and Sports Insights and all these other sites, you bang the books, got a ton of information. I know you do a ton of work over there. I go to Bang the Book daily and look at some of the stuff that's over there. You know, I want to gather more than one opinion, you know, but at the end of the day, the Big 12 conference is going to be better. You're going to be wanting to look at home teams big time. You know, if you can find home teams in this, it's going to be – who? And I didn't look ahead because I'm more worried about today. Where is that Kansas-Kentucky game at?
It's in Lexington.
Well, that's a problem for Kansas. You know, one thing about just that game specifically, and I'm sure Kentucky's going to probably be – I haven't looked at the power ratings on those two, you know, to match those up just yet. Like I said, I'm a little bit more worried about I'll just give you a power rating. I've got my power ratings pulled up here. I'll go ahead and take a look at that. I have Kentucky as a 1 point. I get Kentucky at 93 and Kansas at 92.5. But the one thing about Kentucky, I guess more than anything else, is it's the same Calipari rule that's been in effect. We're not going to look that great in the non-conference schedule. I've got all these studs in here, a bunch of freshmen. Same story, different year, you know, and I'm going to mess with the rotation. I'm going to work in a lot of different players, a lot of different roster changes, and I'm going to figure out what works the best in terms of my team gelling together, playing together the best way, giving us the best chance to win with this player rotation set. This starting five roster, this is the first guy we bring off the bench if this happens. This is the first guy we bring off the bench if that happens. Then they get into about mid-season form, and they start to gel. And that's exactly what Kentucky is doing again this year. Now they're starting to gel. Now they're starting to make a case to be the best team in the SEC, along with Tennessee, you know, who, you know, had a tough game last night and didn't cover a big number their first time being ranked number one, all that stuff. Conversely, Kansas has done nothing to impress me this year. You know, they let games get away from them when they're dominating. West Virginia on the road last weekend was a prime example. You know, they just – the other night they had trouble putting – I had Iowa State against them plus the big – plus 5.5. They barely got out of that game alive. Kansas hasn't got it all together this year yet, in my opinion, and they have trouble putting teams away and closing out games strong. You know, and it's not because they're bored. It's because they're having turnovers. They're still making bad decisions. Where I think Kentucky's on the uprise. They're starting to gel and get it together. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Kentucky win that game, Adam, just based on current form.
Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. What's going on over there right now, Tony?
Well, tell you what, we had a rough weekend last weekend of college basketball, Adam, and we kind of turned it around this week. Missed out on a winning card last night. Unfortunately, I took St. Louis, who shot 10% from three-point range and got beat by a team they out-rebounded by almost 15 rebounds. But at the end of the day, it's a bounce-back mode. My biggest game of the week this week, it's a small valley. It's a small conference game out of the Ohio Valley. which I really like. And then we've got a little late steamer there. And, of course, they have cards guaranteed at DocSports.com. Tons of great information. NBA has been on a really nice roll. I'm still working on my NBA card tonight. I'm torn between a couple of games, and so I'm still working on that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have plays up there at Docs every day by 10:30 in the morning Central, and they're 100% guaranteed. Just get over to DocSports.com and check out our action.
Well, and of course, Tony does a lot of great YouTube stuff as well. So go to YouTube, look for Tony George. You'll find some good free pick videos there. Tony George, DocSports.com. Appreciate the time as always, bud. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, handicapping the hardwood segment with professional handicapper Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com, also contributor to BangTheBook.com, and then Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. Will be short, will be sweet, but it'll give you a good idea of what we're looking at here for Super Bowl 53, and also maybe working a little bit of prop stuff, which we'll definitely talk about next week with Brent as well. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.